ghosts, specters, whatever you want to call them, they've been around for thousands of years.
Apparently she died from a tooth infection in one of the upstairs rooms in the house.
As in the locations they haunt. History of a Haunting podcast tells you all about these famous, infamous, and almost famous locations, and why they became terrifying places to visit. Grab a glass of wine and settle in with your hosts, Archie.
I mean, that was definitely the wrong thing to do.
And Carrie.
Nobody asked for it, Carrie.
Nobody fucking asked for it, but hey, my podcast, and I'll say what I fucking want.
Two people just winging it in life, and this podcast. So enjoy this week's episode of History of a Haunting.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to History of a Haunting. I am your host, Archie.
I am your host, Carrie.
And I'm your host, Laura.
Hi.
And hi.
Hi. Hello.
This episode, we are going to the... Oh, God. Here I am.
Dyatlov
Pass in Sverdlovsk Oblast, Russia, which is about 1,000 miles northwest of Moscow. Aaron, did I fuck that up?
Yes.
And awesome.
1,000%.
Yeah. Russia is a new country of listeners in the last couple of months. And we would like to say thank you for listening. We appreciate you. And goodbye.
Because we are so sorry for how bad these three white Americans are about to abuse your language repeatedly and over and over.
Yeah, they're about to bounce the fuck out right now. So yeah, we will certainly give it our very best effort, but we are going to do a preemptive apology all around. Before we get to the story of this crazy
mystery.
Thank you. I was like, what is the word? See, I don't even know English words, Russia, so there's that. Before we get to this mystery, Arj, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody who the Patreon of the week is?
Our Patreon of the week is Margaret.
Yay!
Yes, our new friend.
Yes,
Margaret.
We have been excited to read notes from and look forward to potentially reading her doctorate.
Yes, her thesis, yeah. So, Margaret, you are our Patreon of the week, and we welcome you, and we love you. We thank you so much for your generosity. And to Margaret, everybody, big standing ovation for Margaret.
Yay! So, I was tasked with putting this article together, and what I found was from a website or a story on museumcenter.org. I read so many stories about this.
Yeah.
That my mind was just warped and blown and twisted around, and I thought this was the best culmination of all of the information.
Great. Okay. Now, Archie, you have never heard of this story, have you?
No, I hadn't. Not a clue.
Laura, did you know about it?
Yes. I've seen some really cool videos and heard some of the theories. And yeah, it's such an interesting story.
It's a really, really interesting story. I think I just recently read an article that they had concluded their investigation with what happened, but it doesn't seem to satisfy most people that have been following this in the decades since it happened. But I agree with you, Arch. I think that everything that you found is succinct and to the point. It hits all of the important parts of the story. And as always, really, really great job on your research. So this one is falls more into like the conspiracy theory type of genre of paranormal. So it's a lot like the episode that we did on Skinwalker Ranch, in that the history and the hauntings, or the you know, mystery of it kind of go hand in hand from the beginning. So Archie has wonderfully broken out these sections of the story, and Laura is going to start us off with the beginning of it. I'm going to talk about the middle part of it, and Archie's going to do his favorite part, which are the actual theories of what happened up there on the mountain. So to that end, Laura, you are going to kick us off with this insane, insane mystery.
It really is. So, all right, we're going to start in January of 1959. 10 hikers, all but one, were students at the Urals Polytechnic Institute in Sverdlovsk. I'm going to go with that pronunciation. I like it.
Sverdlovsk. I like it.
Sverdlovsk. All right. That sounds good, right? It takes into account all the consonants that I love so much.
Yes.
They began a hike into the Ural Mountains. It was led by Igor Jatlov. Okay. Igor? Igor?
Igor? Igor? Russia? Hit us up, let us know.
Right, so all 10 of the people were experienced hikers. They had planned a 3-week trip with a return planned for February 12th. One hiker, Yuri Yudin, left early in the trip on January 28th due to a flare-up of sciatica. Am I saying that right?
Sciatica.
Whatever. Shut up.
Also, this guy...
totally a valid reason. Back out of anything.
Oh, yeah, Archie, you've suffered from that. No, no,
oh, yeah, you? It's the...
But, I mean, in comparison to what he left, he was very lucky.
Oh, yeah, so lucky.
Yeah,
we'll stop.
So he had made it. All right, are you good?
Yeah, good.
Archie, are you done with your poor me and my son? Right. Problem?
Like, listen...
You just don't know.
It may come up again.
Anyways, will you... Oh, you're killing me.
Okay.
Well, poor Yuri. He had made it to the final leg of the trip, getting out to the Ural Mountains by sled, but had to ride back on the sled to return home. By this time, he'd already taken 2 train rides, a bus ride, and then the sled ride with the other hikers to get to the place where they would begin their treacherous journey through the mountains in the winter. He was disappointed to leave, but this decision would ultimately save his life. And I'm not surprised that he had this pain after all these...
I was just going to say...
Like, no wonder he had...
Right? I'm already like, not worth it. This is far too much. Right. I'm just going to go home. I have sciatica. Yeah, I have sciatica too. I got to go.
My back hurts just thinking about this trip. Like, nope. Right. So there are records of the hikers up through February 1st. That day, the hike started late and only managed to cover 2.5 miles, which could have been the burden of excess gear carried by Yudin's departure and low visibility due to the weather. At some point,
he just was like, "I'm out of here. Here's my shit. I'm bye." He didn't even take his stuff with him.
Pretty much, I think. Well, nice. You know, they got to divide the food and all that, right, that they're carrying. So one less person, you're going to...
Oh, okay.
The load's going to get heavier.
Oh, all right. Huh. Okay.
All right. Sound good to you?
Yep.
Right. So at some point, the hikers dropped off excess gear at a base camp before continuing up... This one's going to be bad. Kolat Siaki? Which is Dead Mountain to the native Mansi people.
And it's Dead Mountain to us.
Right? Aptly named. So they set up camp on the slope of the mountain, possibly because they did not want to lose the ground that they'd covered and because they were losing daylight. However, experienced hikers in the area have said it was an odd place to set up camp. They had dinner around 6 or 7 and seemed to be in good spirits based on their personal trip journals. And then nothing. They did not arrive back by February 12th. Though no one was immediately concerned, it was treacherous terrain. They could have been slowed down. Families, however, became worried when they had not heard anything by February 20th, and a search party was sent the following day. Rescuers came across their tent a few days later, but the scene left everyone with more questions than answers. What happened to these hikers?
Okay, so This is where my part comes in, because Archie doesn't like to talk about dead things, and I can't talk about them enough, apparently.
But you do such a good job.
Well, thank you. So when the search party and the rescuers came across their tent, it was the first thing that was found. It was facing north-south, with the entrance facing south, and the north part was covered with 15 to 20 centimeters of snow. For us Americans, that's 6 to 8 inches. I looked it up.
You would have to, because none of us know metric.
You don't know metric. Thank you, Jimmy Carter.
We're imperialists and we're sticking to it.
Yes. So the snow actually appeared to come from the blowing wind and not a sudden avalanche, which I guess was what they had initially thought had happened to them. The individual, the individual who found the tent claims that he found a flashlight on the tent, but this was laying on top of about 10 centimeters of snow, which is about 4 inches. The tent had been cut from the inside, and the entrance exit was actually still fastened closed. So I thought that was a really interesting detail, that why would they have cut the back of the tent to get out of it? Like, was there something at the front of the tent that was like preventing them from going out that just like easily accessible exit? Or was it just faster to cut the tent? Or did somebody cut the tent? I have so many questions, and I hope you're answering probably, some of them.
Probably have been faster to whip out a knife and cut it than try and get your fingers together to unzip a zipper.
Right. Especially if you're like adrenaline, right? Like your adrenaline's pumping because something is happening. You know, I'm sure we've all been there where you get like just jacked and your hands don't quite work, you know?
Right. Even like if you're like rushing to like get in your house and like at, in the night, and you can't even like quite get your key in the lock kind of a thing.
Okay. Exactly.
Yeah.
Or there's, you know, there could have been something at one end too. Of course.
That's true. So the hikers must have escaped the tent through the cuts made on the side. Most of their belongings were actually found inside the tent. So the next thing that the rescuers found were footprints leading downhill, which wasn't abnormal, except that the footprints were those of people in socks or bare feet in Russia in February on a snow-covered mountain. So first red flag, or second red flag, because, you know, they cut in the tent. So there were the remains of a small fire under a cedar tree with branches broken up the tree up to 5 meters up the tree, which is about 16 feet for Americans. Now, the first body was found under the tree, close to the remains of the fire. This body was identified as Doroshenko, and he had burns on his head and one of his feet, minor cuts and bruises, dried blood on his face, and a gray foam substance on his cheeks, which actually indicated a pulmonary edema. And a pulmonary edema is basically excess fluid built up in your lungs. So his cause of death was determined to be hypothermia. Just nearby him was the body of, oh, here we go.
Oh, that's a big one.
That's a big one. I'm going to go with Krivonoshenko.
I think that was excellent.
Great. Yay. Welcome back, Russian listeners.
Das svidaniya. Спасибо.
I think she just said something offensive about my mother in Russian, but I'm just going to gloss over that. So he had similar minor cuts and bruises and was missing the tip of his nose. So he had burns on his hands and a chunk of his knuckle was missing. That would later be found in his mouth. So I don't know if he was scared and just kind of like biting on his knuckles to keep his teeth from chattering, or I'm not sure. Like, that's the only thing I can think of.
That's what I read later on.
Okay.
Is that he was biting his knuckles to circumvent the pain of freezing to death.
Okay. So his death was also hypothermia. Now, Igor Dyatlov, who's the leader of the group and for whom the pass would later be named, he was found 300 meters or 328 yards up the slope, up the slope back toward the tent. He had minor cuts and bruises, a missing tooth and blood on his lips. His cause of death was also hypothermia. So interestingly, his watch had actually stopped at 5:31 a.m. Now, Kolmogorova. Yeah.
Service. Fantastic.
Great. she was found face down about 630 meters or 689 yards up the hill from the cedar tree. She was found closest to the tent. She also had minor cuts and bruises, but she had a large blunt force bruise of unknown origin. But her cause of death was also hypothermia. So Slobodin.
I'm going with Slobodin.
Okay. Wasn't found until March 5th. So almost a month after they were supposed to have returned from this hike. And he was found between Kolmogorova and Dyatlov on the hill. Now, he was wearing one boot. He had similar minor wounds and a fractured skull. So the fractured skull, however, wasn't actually serious enough to cause death. And again, his death was determined to be hypothermia. So the last four hikers were not found until 2 months later when the area began to thaw. They were found in a 6-foot ravine. This is actually written in the article, 6-foot ravine, so I didn't bother to translate it into metric.
2 meters.
There we go. Let's see, if 10 centimeters is 4 inches, then no, okay. So, Kolevatov?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Was found to have died of hypothermia, but had a broken nose and was missing his eyes and the soft tissue around them. But this was likely from animal predation. His clothes were found later to have traces of radioactivity on them. He and Zolotaryov, hey, look at me go.
That was amazing.
Can't say an English word to save my fucking life. But Russian. Nostroya!
Amal, you have a calling to learn Russian. Only a language that you can pronounce.
Apparently. Aaron also says I do really well with Japanese words as well, so I'm not really sure. But I can't say a, an, or the.
Right.
So anyway, he and Zolotaryov, the one non-student member and the most experienced hiker of the group, were embraced like they were trying to preserve body heat. Now, he died from a crushed chest and had a pen and paper in his hand, but was never able to write his message. Now, Thibaut Brignol.
Oui. That sounds right.
Okay. All right, cool. Was nearby, and he died from an impact to his skull. And Dubinina died of a crushing injury to her chest, and her eyes, tongue, and soft tissue were missing. But again, that might have been animal predation. She had blood in her stomach and radioactivity on her clothes, which were found later. I imagine, if similar to the guy whose knuckle was found in his mouth, her tongue might have been... Maybe she bit her tongue, bit it off in the shivering.
Maybe.
So anyway, she had blood in her stomach and radioactivity on her clothes, which was found later. The region itself was also said to have signs of radioactivity, though only confirmation was found on their clothing. Now, with almost all of these folks having their official cause of death being hypothermia, I was like, okay, so they've got cuts and bruises, they've got like skull fractures, like what the freaking hell happens to the body during hypothermia? So I looked up the stages of hypothermia, and there are 5. The first stage is mild hypothermia, which is 35 to 32 degrees Celsius of the body's core temperature. And hypothermia sets in when the body's core temperature drops below 35 degrees Celsius, which is about 95 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, it does not take a lot of body temperature loss.
It doesn't, because what is it, like the standard body temperature is like 98.6, or maybe they've lowered that a little to like 97. But once you hit 95 degrees, hypothermia is starting to set in, which I found fascinating. So in the very first stage, normal or near normal consciousness and shivering set in. In stage two is moderate hypothermia, in which case the body's core temperature drops 32 to 28 degrees Celsius. The shivering stops and consciousness becomes impaired. Now, this is about the part, Arch, where I think you and I have talked about hypothermia before, where people feel like they're getting hot. Mm-hmm. So they take their clothes off because right. their body thinks they're burning up.
Yep.
In stage three is severe hypothermia, which is 24 to 28 degrees. Unconsciousness occurs. And it may be difficult to detect vital signs. In stage four is apparent death, 15 to 24 degrees, which is about 75 degrees in Fahrenheit. And, but in apparent death, you can still be brought back. You can still be, your life can still be saved in that fourth stage. Mm-hmm. In the fifth stage, death is, occurs from irreversible hypothermia.
And so, I have personally experienced stage two.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. You think that you're so cold that your clothes are just fire.
Really?
What? And yeah, it's fortunately I've never ventured into stage three.
Thank God. Like it's,
you know, it's fucking cold and you are not burning hot. So I know this crazy. I know all sorts of crazy and I know this one too.
Well, you know, it's crazy because I don't think a lot of people, they're like, oh, they just got really cold. Well, yeah, but there's a little bit more to it. It basically, hypothermia occurs when the body's ability to generate heat by burning calories, muscle exertion, and shivering is overwhelmed by heat loss. Mm-hmm. I read a thing after the Titanic movie came out that a lot of those people could have been saved that were in the water. They could have been saved. They weren't necessarily in that worst stage. They could have been, their lives could have been saved because they were at like stage four hypothermia.
Certainly. And in my case, my friend and I were out sledding and we were just in our neighborhood. We weren't in the middle of an ocean or in the middle of Siberia. We actually had the opportunity to realize this isn't right. We need to go home and warm up.
That's amazing.
And we did.
Could you imagine being stuck out there? I mean, like, so a lot of these different things, like you were saying, you know, your body makes it feel like it's on fire. So you start to take your clothes off, but you know, that accounts for the footprints that were bare feet or sock feet. And the one guy that was maybe missing his shoe and, you know, so, but I find it really interesting that there were like a fractured skull. Obviously the eyes and the soft tissue around the eyes, of course, animal predation is not a far stretch. But what would have caused them? They were hikers and they had been there for like, presumably they had gone through already a number of things to get to that point on the mountain. So they were prepared to spend the night on that mountain. So what happened in that one night that caused them all to be like, get the fuck out, cut this open, run.
It's funny you should mention that because I do bring that up.
Good.
And the big thing for me too is like, okay, if you had to get out of there because there was bear, whatever happens, right? Why wouldn't you go back? Especially if you're freezing to death, like that's your shelter. Unless like there was a clear and imminent danger still there, but they weren't even that far from it, right? They weren't even that far from the tent, some of them.
Right.
So like, why wouldn't you go back to the tent?
Well, and the tent might not have been their very best source of protection, which will be coming up shortly.
All right.
Okay.
Any answers, Archie?
Okay, so Archie, you have all the answers, and you're going to have to solve this case for us because I don't like all the questions I have and no goddamn answers.
All right, do we want to take a break first, or do you want me to just get right in it?
Yes, let's take a quick break, everybody. Please listen to this wonderful promo for one of our buddy podcasts, and we will be back as Archie cracks open the case of what happened to the hikers at the Diat Log Pass.
Along with his beer.
Along with his beer.
Yes, with along with another beer.
We will be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Prash, host of Prash's Murder Map. Pack your passport and jump on a plane, because I'd like to take you on a journey to investigate some of the most heinous, macabre, and enigmatic murders across the globe and throughout history. We'll look at forensics, psychology, and more as we dissect solved and unsolved cases like Australia's Frankston Killer and a murderous family on the American frontier. If you'd like to give my podcast a try, you can find me on all major podcast platforms and YouTube. Hope to see you soon.
Okay, guys, we are back, and Archie is going to crack this case wide open for us. Go.
All right. So what happened? As
I'm going to say it's a Yeti. That's what I vote.
Wow.
No, am I wrong? Am I way off?
I'd like to get the sentence out, but...
He's like, bitch, I'm gonna tell you, just shut up.
So what happened?
Wait, maybe it was a bullet. I'm kidding.
Oh my god.
I quit. It's a UFO. It's just shout stuff at him the whole time. Somebody farted and smelled so bad in the tent that it opened and run out.
Oh my god.
It was Ted Bundy.
Nazis.
You know, I really like day drinking, but now I understand.
I understand the necessity now to put up with us. Is that what you're saying?
As you can imagine.
It was Imhotep.
Oh my god.
Caesar! It was Caesar!
Oh my god.
All right, I'm muting myself, I swear.
Oh god, can I mute you?
It's not working, I can still hear you.
Also, no.
You're just going to be this torturous voice inside Archie's head now.
Oh, it already is.
Yeah, I bet.
As you can imagine, the theories range from mundane to fucking ludicrous. The sheer amount of theories cannot be truly managed here, but there are a few categories. Foul play. Yeti. One of the possibilities is of a more mundane nature is that the camp was met with foul play. One theory posits some of the hikers were double agents, transporting radioactive samples and searching for CIA agents reportedly in the area. However, something went wrong and the CIA agents attacked. However, it seems very unlikely. If they were transporting radioactive samples, why were only their clothes radioactive? And right. The theory points the finger at Zolotaryov, Kolovetov, and Karipizhenko? Is that what you said?
I don't know. I closed my notes because my part was done.
Well, they were
those guys
as being the spies, but only Kolovetov of the group had radioactive clothes. The other was Dubinina. Why did they cut themselves out of their tent? Why did six of them die of hypothermia? It explains very little. Another theory claims that they were mistaken for fugitives from the gulags or witnesses to something they shouldn't have seen. The primary piece of evidence for this is that the region had gulags, and Yuri Yudin, the survivor, claimed a piece of clothing was here that did not belong to anyone in the group.
What is a gulag?
The gulag is a Russian prison in Siberia.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, there's literally no other term for it except for prison in Siberia, basically.
They were like work camps, too. They like worked them to death.
Holy shit. Okay. Mm-hmm. So kind of like North Korea, and you do like, that's your hard labor
Yeah, hard labor.
Kind of, but Siberia specific.
Yeesh.
Super cold.
Yeah. That evidence later disappeared from the evidence room. This theory explains very little, and the fact that Zola Tarayev, a World War II veteran, had joined the group last minute, and also is an easy explanation for how this piece of clothing got there. It is unlikely that Yudin had a photographic memory of his compatriots' clothing items, especially if they were underclothes. And I'm now understanding how ridiculous that paragraph sounds.
I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, like, and if so, he's super creeps, and I'm glad he went home.
Yeah.
why do you know what everybody's underwear looks like? Like, that's
just, yeah, that I got totally lost in that paragraph too. I should.
Nobody is buying your fucking sciatica now, buddy.
Right.
Oh shit. The indigenous people of the region, the Mansi, another theory is that in the foul play section is that the indigenous people of the region, the Mansi, attacked the group, one theory says. However, they were an easy scapegoat, and they would have no reason to. The area was not special to the Mansi, and all of the belongings were left behind, so it was not a robbery.
So kind of like the pirate theory in the Mary Celeste, like worst pirates ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Another foul play theory was an altercation between the hikers themselves, but that explains very little. Why would everyone have died? Why did most of them die of hypothermia? Why did all of them leave the tent? There was also no evidence they had ill will towards each other.
You are not answering any of my questions. You're simply adding to my giant list.
Oh, hi. You must be new here.
Oh, right. Sorry.
There are two things about the Dialata Pass incident that really stoke the fires of those who believe in a supernatural explanation.
That's what I'm here for. Go.
The signs of radiation and an image from
I'm pretty sure that is not the second name.
Thibodeau-Brignoles camera. The Yeti attack theory is given weight by local legends among the Mansi people as such a creature, but doesn't explain much of the other parts. Why did most die of hypothermia? Why were the most severe injuries crushing injuries, not slash marks or bite marks? Why did they cut out of their tent instead of the Yeti ripping into it? There are so many things wrong with this theory. Why did they stop to build a fire? As far as UFOs, this one is extremely popular. As it goes, a UFO scared them from their tent and is the cause for the radiation. They still don't understand the explanation of the fire, the broken cedar branches, hypothermia, etc. Part of the intrigue comes from Lev Ivanov, the man in charge of the investigation at the time, making claims in the early 1990s about forest treetops being burned and being forced to take out the pictures Mansi hunters had given of flying spheres.
Really?
Ivanov was paid for the interview where he gave this information. He was also a proponent of freak ball lightning in 1959, and the man that forced Ivanov to take out the mentions of the UFOs was obsessed with UFOs.
I'm sorry, can we please go back to freak ball lightning? What is that?
Well, ball lightning is a normal thing. Well,
on
is it
Scruff or we partook in some freak ball lightning.
Oh yeah. Actually, there's a spot in the United States where ball lightning is sort of common.
What is it? Like literally like a ball of lightning?
Well, it's in Marfa, Texas, where it's very most common. It's not exactly understood, but that's the best explanation we have.
So it's a natural occurrence.
It's a natural electromagnetic occurrence, but only specific to certain spots in the world.
Apparently, I just looked it up because I was like, what?
Oh, God.
Yeah, they really don't know what causes it. And it's been documented since the ancient Greeks.
Wow.
It really happens. And there's some photos up here. I suggest we put one up. It's interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And actually, Carrie, if you and your family are going to go the southern route, you will not be very far from Marfa, Texas, which is well known for having ball lightning.
And Marfa's like a weird, cool little art town. Like they have, there's like a Prada store in the middle of nowhere there. There's like, it's, you have to look it up. It's very strange.
I was like, a lot of people go there. Not what I was expecting you to say.
I know, right? Like go to Marfa, Texas. But Marfa's this strange little town.
It's a weird place where a weird thing happens.
Yeah, very odd little town.
Huh. Okay, yeah, I definitely need to look this up, and we will put a picture of it on our social media. Now, this is one of the theories, Arch?
I've gone over two.
Well, I mean, it's one of the two.
one of the two. The other is nature. Nature is the most likely culprit here. An avalanche is unlikely due to the slope of the mountain they were on, the small amount of snow found on the tent, and this not being an avalanche-prone area. The footprints would have been wiped away. For one, the group would not have been able to outrun an avalanche either. The most likely scenario is called a katabatic wind. Katabatic means descending wind. It is also called gravity wind. It is a phenomenon that occurs over ice sheets or cooled mountain areas, including the topography of the Dyletov Pass area. This hurricane force wind can reach up to 81 meters per second and happen suddenly without warning, like a storm.
Okay, that sounds terrifying.
Yeah, this phenomenon also occurs at night. One such wind killed skiers in Sweden in 1978 when a wind erupted out of a calm day at 20 meters per second. They abandoned their camp, most died of exposure, and their bodies were found with minor injuries. The bodies were found at intervals that led away from a hastily constructed snow shelter. The difference here is that one person survived.
Okay, so then that actually would account for the cuts, the bruises, like the physical damage to the body that hypothermia does not cause.
Correct.
Okay.
And again, in 2019, Swedish adventurers and local guides followed the path of the hikers to replicate the exact trip of the hikers. They went out at the same time of year, followed the same path with the same supplies. They experienced extreme and unpredictable changes in weather. The Swedish adventurers then came up with the katabatic wind theory, and this is supported by situational evidence. For instance, one, after a tiring day of hiking, the tent was pitched hastily with standing skis and was not angled on the gradient as it should have been. Two, a gale force wind swept down the gradient of the mountain, threatening to rip apart their tent and they cut their way out of the tent for speed and shoveled snow on top of the tent to hold it down in the strong winds using what they had, their bare hands. 3, they left a flashlight on top of their tent as they evacuated to act as a beacon to guide them back to camp.
Oh.
4, they went down the slope to seek shelter in the trees and lower elevation from the winds on the mountain. They were buffeted by debris lifted by the strong winds. 5, the 3 found on the slope died where they fell as they descended the mountain without shoes in light clothing. Slobodin, Kolmogorov, and Dyatlov. 6, Doroshenko, a notoriously brave man, and Krivonishenko took responsibility for constructing a fire, with Doroshenko climbing the cedar tree to break off branches for the fire.
Okay.
The other 4 were to build shelters in the ravine to shield them from the winds. The wicked winds would explain the burns or collapsing into the fire as they succumbed to hypothermia.
Okay.
His knuckle injury was from biting it to stay conscious. 7, the remaining 4 members went into the ravine and huddled together in a snow shelter, but the snow shelter collapsed onto them, crushing the last 4 members. Dubonina had been crawling into the shelter when it collapsed on all of them. Soft tissue decomposition happens naturally, particularly in water.
Mm-hmm.
Individuals in the ravine had been in water and refroze during melting and refreezing periods.
Oh, God. Okay.
But what about the radioactivity?
Yeah, that's an excellent question.
Kolevatov was a student of nuclear physics, and he could have come into contact with radioactive materials. Dubonina was an engineering and economics major. There was also the fact that it was 2 months later before the bodies with radioactive traces were found. And there were several possibilities for contamination. Only beta particles were found, and they are used in product testing to determine the thickness of an item, and these particles can be transferred to said item. Perhaps this was done on the clothes or on the tarp the students were carried in. The radioactivity appears to be little more than a red herring, leading people away from the most logical conclusion, as it is usually in the case with these kinds of mysteries. And that is me finishing this out.
I think it's the nature one. I think it is the hurricane winds on that mountain that seemed it explains all of the damage to the bodies, the idea that the one guy would have climbed up the trees and like that's what broke the branches off 16 feet up the tree to make the fire. That seems the most plausible explanation.
I have heard one other one that's pretty good. It was
Caesar.
And it's right. It was totally Caesar. They had those like stovepipe like fires in the tent to keep
it was warm. Lincoln. It was Abraham Lincoln.
It's the ghost of Dolly Madison. God damn it.
God damn it. Everybody
followed us.
Stop eating her dairy stuff.
Right. Don't touch the rose garden, Melania.
Right.
Okay. So there's a fire that, and they have the pipe leading out, right, to let the smoke out. Something happens, and maybe it was wind or whatever, but the smoke starts filling up the tent. They have to get out quickly. They go out, and then pretty much what happens after that follows along, like the hypothermia, falling down, making the fire, all of that kind of falls in line. And the radioactivity, I did read somewhere that it wasn't even high. It's not like they got some really high radioactive
spikes or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like it was, it's like what was on their clothing is just out of the range of
normal,
something normal. Yeah. So it's not, it wasn't like really high. So it's not like, you know, they were walking around with radioactive isotopes in their pocket.
Yeah. Nobody was carrying yellow cake uranium in their backpack or anything.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and there's even theories that there was some sort of romantic entanglement, that alcohol was involved and everybody freaked out.
I mean, well, that I buy.
Well, the thing is, they had a little container of alcohol, but it was medical grade.
Ew.
Meaning it was to be taken for wounds and things, and that wasn't even touched when all of their supplies were found.
I like the Abraham Lincoln theory. He was hunting vampires in Russia.
As he does.
As he does when he's not haunting the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And then a hurricane blew through Siberia. I tend to think it was, the ball lightning and the Siberian hurricane. That seems to just kind of fit the evidence and the trauma to the bodies and all of that.
Yeah. Exactly. Nature is a bitch.
Mother Nature, man, she will fuck you up.
Siberia, like in the mountains inside, like, come on.
Like, you were talking about, like,
why did you go in the first place?
Seriously.
It's cold.
Number one, hiking. Number two, Siberia. Number three, you have to carry your own gear.
Right. Worst vacation ever.
Number four, Russians are a different breed.
This is
they are hard.
They're very
fuck with them.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Mother Nature can fuck with them, apparently.
Yeah, like I can't even imagine the Swedes that decided to take this on after knowing everything that had happened to the original people. They're like, yeah, we're gonna follow this and see what's going on. Like, why? Yeah. Why would you do that?
Like, you gotta know,
right?
No, there's
one way or another.
Yeah, yeah. This has always been a really fascinating story, I think, just simply because there are so many different theories about what happened to them. And some of them range from the insane, like Abraham Lincoln vampire hunter, to
or UFOs.
Yeti, UFOs, some of the ones I threw in there.
Right.
But yeah, it's always been a really interesting story that I think My Favorite Murder has covered it, and a couple of other podcasts. I think even maybe the last podcast on the left covered it. So it's always been a really, really fascinating story. So I like that we're getting into this conspiracy theory mystery kind of genre of the paranormal, because the paranormal umbrella encompasses so much. It's not just ghosts and things that go bump in the night. So I'm really excited that we're starting to delve into the conspiracy theory side of things. So to that end, we're going to be doing solely conspiracy theories once a month for our Patreon listeners at the $5 and up donor level. We just released our very first one, and every 15th of the month, there's a new conspiracy theory that we're going to be putting out. So join us at patreon.com/HOAH podcast. And that is it for this week's episode. Arch, we've got a couple of double recordings, you guys, coming up, because I'm getting ready to move. So we're going to not be recording for a couple of weeks while I trek my whole family across the United States, nowhere near Siberia or any kind of treacherous terrain like that. But I will be acting dramatic, like it is a big trek across Siberia, because we're taking three dogs. But so we are going to be doubling up on episodes and stockpiling some episodes in the bank so that none of you ever miss a single episode. We're still going to be putting out content every Saturday morning. And we got some really fun stuff coming up.
We're really going to miss Carrie when she goes to the gulag.
Yeah.
which is her move.
Hey, yes.
Hey, we don't talk about that.
We don't say it out loud, but she's not wrong. Yeah. So we've got some whole towns that we're going to be covering that are haunted, and some pretty cool places here in the United States. I think, Arch, I sent you a big list of places to look into that may or may not be wonderfully haunted. Did you?
I think I printed them, but they've been buried under like 400 emails.
Yeah,
I'll try and take a look for them.
Yeah, that's fine. We've got plenty of time. So anyway, guys, that's all we have. We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Mystery of the Dyatlov Pass, or the Dyatlov Pass, or the Dynasty Crossing, whatever you want to call it, however you want to say it in your bungled American accent.
Damn.
Yeah. All right. That's all we got, guys. We hope you enjoyed it. We will see you next week with a brand new location. And Archie, Laura, as always, let's tell them they've got to be safe out there, because they never know who
or what
is listening. Bye, guys.
Bye. Yeah.